Om Padataya Patibhotitam Bhagavatam Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kritam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashadashadhyayunim Ambatvamanisantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavad Vaishini. And verse 6. Etad yonini bhutani. Sarvani chipadharaya, sarvani chipadharaya, aham krishnasya jagataha, prabhavath prabhalas pralayas tatha, prabhavath pralayas tatha, etad yonini bhutani, sarvani iti upadharaya, aham krishnasya jagataha, prabhavaha pralayaha tatha. Did I say sarvani iti upadharaya? Okay. Pralayaha tatha. Okay. In the previous two verses, he's introducing prakriti. He's introducing in verse 4 and 5. Is twofold prakriti, apara prakriti and para prakriti. The apara prakriti is what he calls the lower prakriti. Then he introduces the lower prakriti as bhumi, apaha, analaha, earth, water, fire, air, space, the mind, the buddhi, the ahankara. These things all make up the manifest creation. So the lower prakriti is the maya upadhi, everything that makes up the manifest creation, everything that's responsible for the projection of duality. That's the apara prakriti, which we call maya. Okay? The prakriti, Sankhya calls it prakriti. We also call it prakriti. When we call it prakriti, we mean maya, that which is comprised of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, that projects, you know, as the five subtle elements, the ten matras. And then goes through a process of grossification to account for absolutely everything that exists within duality. All nama rupa, all of the name and form that exists within duality. He says, this is made of the five elements, the buddhi, the manas, the intellect, the mind, and the ahankara. All of this is my apara prakriti. This is my apara prakriti, my lower prakriti. Then he says to Arjuna, may you know the prakriti which is param, that supreme prakriti, or the higher prakriti. Right? So he says, and that prakriti, it's that prakriti, which is your own nature, jiva bhutam, that prakriti, which is the atma, is your own self. That is the nature of the jiva. This means the nature of the jiva is atma. There is no other jiva. The jiva is atma, which is Brahman. And so it is that my prakriti, that para prakriti, which is jiva bhutam, which is the nature of the jiva, the very self of the... Oh, dear. You can go fly out the window.
No, he's a...
Oh, where?
A worm.
Or is it a plant?
Are you going to save it?
That's, well, for the, that's because of the plants that you've been doing.
Don't watch the cable.
Thank you.
Don't step on it.
Go fishing tomorrow.
Did he bring several worms a day? So, that jiva bhutam, that prakriti, its nature is your very being. He says, yaya idam dharyate jagat. This whole creation is supported by that, right? It's the adhishtana, the whole creation, is supported, means has for it. It's the dharana, it's the basis, it holds it. It means the adhishtana, right? So I am the adhishtana, I am the support, I am the being of this whole prakriti, of this whole creation. And that and myself as the support of this whole creation, that one who is the support of this creation, that is your nature. That is Jiva Bhuti, that is the very nature of your being. So that it is this Prakriti that I want you to know. Okay? May you know that Prakriti, this Para Prakriti. So now he says, he's going to talk about that, now this Para Prakriti, which is the Satchitananda, which is Brahman, which is just pure limitless existence, which is consciousness. So now he says, Etad Yonini Bhutani Sarvani Iti Upadarya. He says, may you understand, Upadarya, may you understand, imperative case, Upadarya, may you understand that, what? May you understand that Bhutani Sarvani, Sarvani Bhutani, all beings, all Bhutas, all things, Bhutas means all things that have come into being, in whole creation, all beings, Etad Yoni, Yonini, in the plural for Sarva Bhutani, Etad Yonini, all beings have these two prakritis as their cause. Yoni means actually womb. But yoni is a word that's used for as womb, it's used for cause. So may you know that all beings, all things that have come into being, that have come into existence, or you could say all living beings, but it's also all the Bhutas, all of the elements, everything that is manifest in the prakriti, all beings have these two, the apara and the para prakriti, as their yoni, as their cause. And he says, aham krishnasya jagataha prabhavaha, says aham, I am the prabhava, I am the birth, I am the source, right, the one from whom things are born. I am the source of krishnasya jagata, of this entire creation. I am the one from whom it has come, right, I am the source of this whole creation. Pralayaha tatha, and I am the one whom this creation resolves into. So remember what we say is the Bhagavan, or the creation goes through a process of Srishti. That's the Prabhava. Srishti means it comes into manifestation. So I am the one from whom this creation comes. I'm the source of the creation. Srishti, Stiti, the creation is sustained. And then that creation resolves back into what? Into that same source. So I am the one from whom the creation manifests, and I am the one into whom the creation resolves. So that's Prabhavaha and Pralayaha. So now this verse is... it's a big verse. Swamiji spends some time unfolding this verse, because it's talking about, there's some technical things to understand in it. The prakriti means the material cause. You know, what is the stuff of this creation? That's the prakriti. That stuff from which the creation comes. So now, Krishna's unfolding this in this prakriti in a way that, say, Sankhya would not do. Right? Because we're looking at the source of this creation as being Advaita, non-dual. So in a sense, there's only one real source. So now what he's saying is that there are, the prakriti that we're looking at is twofold. So that's what we're going to start with, to see what the twofold prakriti is. The one prakriti... first prakriti, the apara prakriti, is what's responsible for the manifestation of the creation. Prakriti as upadana karana means material cause. So the one prakriti is the material cause, or what is responsible for the projection of all names and forms. So that prakriti, the lower prakriti, is what modifies into, what transforms itself into the creation. It modifies itself into the creation. So it's called, that prakriti is called parinama upadana karana. Upadana karana means material cause. Parinama means the material cause which goes through a modification to become something. Like, for instance, or the example that we often use is that milk goes through a modification to become curd. Curd is the basis, right? I mean, milk is the basis for the curd. But the milk itself changes. Once it changes into curd, you can't get the milk back. It's in a sense, it's become the curd. Right? It's modified itself into the curd. And so when we see one thing modifying itself into another, and then into another, into another, you're actually, the material causes itself changing into become one thing and then another thing and another thing. So now in this creation that we experience is in a process of continual modification. Like the nama rupas, one form goes into another form, into another form, into another form. Things are in constant process of change. That process of change, that changing, is what we call parinama. It's going through modifications. So we do experience in this creation something which is modifying. We're not experiencing the creation as changeless. In fact, we're experiencing it as continually changing. So here, that material cause, that upadana karanam, is what we call maya. If we were to define maya, what is maya in terms of this creation? It's the parinama upadana karana. It's that prakriti that is the lower prakriti, which is going through continual modification to manifest as this creation. Okay. So now, what's the higher one? What's the higher upadana karana? That upadana karana, material cause, is what we call vivarta upadana karana. That's the material cause that goes through no change whatsoever to become the creation. So we have something that goes through change, something which goes through no change. So now for a situation like this, you need a drishtanta, you need an illustration. Right? Because we don't understand this type of thing. When we think of an upadana karana, this is our situation. In the world, when you think of a material cause of something, you think of the material which the person, the creator, right, is working with in order to create something. Like, for instance, we use the example of a pot maker, for instance. The pot maker, the nimitta karana, the efficient cause, is working with some material to create something. And that material he modifies and works with, creates something out of it, right? And so that upadana karana is always going to be parinama. It's something that we're working with. We're making something out of it. And the nimitta karana is somebody who's different, who has a subject-object relationship with that. That's what we're used to. So when we think of upadana karana, we're thinking of something that modifies. Material causes, something that we make something out of. Okay, now, here in this creation, we have this world which is going through continual flux. But now the thing is, what is its substance? Here we're getting into the nature of Ishvara. When Ishvara said the nimitta upadana karana, there's two things going on here. Well, let me back up. There's two things going on here in your experience. There's the okay, maybe I can explain it this way. This is anything that we haven't been through. I'm just...
Are you reading the Sanskrit?
It's right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You want to explain this in a certain way and it's not working, so I have to do it in another way.
Mm-hmm.
Ishvara's nature, every one of us has in a limited way. In other words, when we talk about Ishvara, we talk about the Sameshti Upadhi. Ishvara's Upadhi is the Sameshti Upadhi. It's the total manifestation of Maya. So the whole Maya Upadhi, you know, is his being, is his form. But every one of us is part of that stuff. In other words, what is Ishvara, the components of Ishvara, Ishvara's self, Ishvara's creation, we are of that, right? Because you're part and parcel of this creation. So the very stuff that this creation is made out of is what you're made out of, on every level, right? So now, what Ishvara has in an infinite degree, you say that Jiva also has, but in a limited degree. So we'll also say the capacities that Ishvara has in an infinite degree are the capacities that the Jiva has on a limited degree, in a limited way. And so because of that, you can actually directly, immediately appreciate the relationship of these two prakritis, this para prakriti and this apara prakriti. This is the language that Krishna is using here. You don't have to use that language. You can say, you can also appreciate the relationship of your being, consciousness, which is the para prakriti, which is jiva bhutam, which is your nature. You can appreciate the relationship of that para prakriti, which is consciousness, to apara prakriti, which is the manifestation of knowledge. Every one of us has a self, a conscious being, and every one of us has the manifestation of knowledge. You can say, just look at it in terms of your mind. You have a relationship between you, the conscious being that you are, right, and every thought that you have. The thought comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. It is your thought. The consciousness is not away from the thought, right? The thought comes from consciousness, is sustained by consciousness, resolves into consciousness. The consciousness is the self of the thought. Usually we can talk this way and get away with it. You can say, yes, right? Yes, that's right. You can say, I can have an imagination. The imagination comes from me, is sustained by me, and goes back into me. If I say, think of a tree right now, you'll think of a tree. The tree comes from your being, is sustained by your being, goes back into your being. So now if we're just looking at your own experience in reference to you, the conscious being, plus this creative capacity, right? You are a conscious being plus this creative capacity that we can call the mind. But instead of calling the mind or the mind stuff or the chit or whatever word we want to use it, we are just going to call it maya. Right? You are a conscious being with this capacity, this creative capacity that we call maya. Now the question is, if we look at just you in reference to your mind, to this creative capacity, just you, I'm just going to call it creative capacity, the capacity to think, the capacity to imagine, the capacity to have feelings, all of these thoughts, these thought formations that come, right? It's more called, and we can call it manifest knowledge, limited manifest knowledge. And it's multifarious. There's all kinds of it. There's limited manifestations in terms of feelings, in terms of thoughts, in terms of images, in terms of perceptions, in terms of imaginations, all kinds of manifest knowledge. Why do we call it manifest knowledge? Because whatever manifests is known. Right? It's an experience. And as soon as it manifests, it's known. And it exists within duality, right? It's a manifestation of an experience, of a perception, of a vision of some sort, of an imagination of some sort. You can have affect to it. But these imaginations come from you, are sustained by you, they resolve back into you. And now what we're doing, what Krishna is doing here from his own standpoint of Ishvara, he is differentiating as Ishvara now, as the whole, and we're just doing it as a jiva. He's differentiating from between his the conscious being, the me, and these manifestations of knowledge. For Ishvara, the manifestation of knowledge is in the form of the entire infinite creation. For you, as a jiva, who are part of that infinite creation, that manifest knowledge is in the form of a thought. Right? Take it like this. This physical body is part of Ishvara's thought. Ishvara's infinite creation. Here's this physical body, including the mind and the sense organs. Right, this whole thing, the mind, the sense organs, the physical body, this is part of infinite manifest knowledge. But now that you are a Buddha, a being, a jiva within this infinite manifest knowledge, you have the capacity to be your own little Ishwara. So from the standpoint, so let me just pull back a little bit. If we look at it from Ishwara's standpoint, what he's telling you is that this infinite manifestation of knowledge comes from my lower prakriti that we call Maya. The higher prakriti is my being, which is your being. Jiva Bhutam, the higher prakriti, that is the very being that is here, that higher prakriti is your being. If I look at it at the lower prakriti, right, then this body, mind, sense, organs is part of this infinite manifestation that includes your buddhi, your mind, your ahankara, your physical body, right? That's all for the lower prakriti, and from that perspective, your body, mind, sense, organs are part of my lower prakriti. But in terms of the higher prakriti, I am you. That is your very being. The higher prakriti, the Sat-Chit-Ananda, that is you. Okay. So now that's from Ishwara's standpoint. That's what he's unfolding. Now, what if we look at it, you are mini Ishwara. Right? You are limited Ishwara. What Ishwara has and the total capacity that he has in reference in the relationship between consciousness and Maya, Maya being responsible for the projection of the whole creation, you have that exact same relationship in reference to your thought, in reference to your imagination. The same relationship where there's the conscious me and the thought. Conscious me and the emotion. Conscious me and the imagination. Whatever that imagination is, that's your or thought or feeling, that's your Maya. So there's the awareful being you, plus this Maya, which creates a little universe, the universe of your mind, which you're living in, which is encompassing you in a sense. That's your Maya, right? And you are there as the very conscious being, the very self of that Maya. Right? You pervade the Maya, you're the being of the Maya, you're the Sat, you're the existence of the Maya, you're the consciousness of the Maya, you are the one from whom the Maya has come, you're the one because of whom the Maya is known, you're the self of the Maya. Right? Now, what a jnani has to understand, when you gain knowledge, what you have to do is to be able to differentiate these two prakritis. The Maya is creating all kinds of things. The Maya, your Maya, creates, you know, emotions and worlds upon worlds within worlds within worlds. You're creating worlds all the time. You know, and then those worlds have affect also. So your Maya is creating a whole universe that you find yourself living in a sense. So that Maya is continually being experienced. That Maya is not at all away or separate from or apart from the conscious being, you, the me, in which these projections are taking place. Now, what you have to recognize is that the conscious me, that is the very self of this phenomena that we call Maya, is not changing at all. The self is always the same. It's the one from whom the thought comes, who sustains the thought, and into whom the thoughts resolve. That's the one that has to be recognized. That one is the, what we call, Vivarta Upadana Karana. Vivarta Upadana Karana. We would say that you, who you are the Vivarta Upadana Karana of this Maya, of your Maya. That means that you are the very self of your experiences. You're the existence. You give existence to your experiences. You give consciousness to your experiences. You're really the substance. You're what is there. But you don't change to become those experiences. You're not like a pot maker, you know. You're not like a material cause that is being modified. In other words, say you have an experience of sadness. That's maya. Okay? You have an experience of sadness. The experience of sadness belongs to the maya, not to the conscious being. The conscious being is the existence which the experience of sadness enjoys. It's the consciousness which the experience of sadness enjoys. And that way it's the very beings, the very self of the experience of sadness. But it itself isn't becoming sad. Consciousness isn't becoming sad. It's not becoming happy. It's not becoming anything. It's remaining in exactly the same way. Exactly the same. And how do you recognize it in terms of the maya of your mind, all of the different thoughts and moods and emotions? It is the me that is there having those thoughts and emotions. We can talk like that. I'm not really having them, but I'm saying these are my thoughts. These are my emotions. These are my feelings. These are my imaginations. That means there's a me there. The me isn't being swept away. The imagination doesn't take away the me, right? The imagination or the emotions can create all kinds of intense feelings, intense reactions, but I'm always there in the middle of it. You can say you're getting swept away, but you're not, because yourself is always the one that is the center, that is the being, is the consciousness, which that imagination is enjoying. And that imagination will come into being and go out of being. Your thought, your emotion will come into being, will go out of being. All of your experiences come into being and go out of being. The being is you. Being doesn't come into being and going out of being. Consciousness doesn't come into being or go out of being. It is always exactly the same. And so this was what we call vivarta upadana karana. It is the material cause. It is that which is actually there. But it doesn't go through any type of modification to become the experience that you're experiencing. That's why he says, too, you need maya to go through all of these modifications. But then if we analyze, what is the relationship between this maya, that just as a jiva brings me so many feelings, so many thoughts, so many experiences, so many imaginations, so many perceptions, what is this maya? He says, it's my lower prakriti. You know, it's what gives all of the experiences, but know that all of these experiences come from me, are sustained by me, and go back into me. I am, in fact, their self. I myself am not going through any type of modification at all. So vivarta means that I am what is actually here, but I'm not changing to become the experience. So they use the example for this. Rope snake. Over and over and over again. Right? The rope is the vivarta upadana karana. Vivarta means without the bends in the rope, there's no bends in the snake. Without the diameter of the rope, there's no diameter for the snake. What is there is a rope. It's all that's there. But there's a lower prakriti which allows for the appearance of the snake. There's something that allows for that. That's what we call the lower prakriti. That's what we call maya. We say it's a lower prakriti because what is the relationship in terms of reality between the rope and the snake? This phenomena snake is there, but it doesn't have any being of its own. So the rope remains as the vivarta upadana karana. You know, it's responsible. It is the only thing that is there, you know, in terms of the relationship between the rope and snake. The only thing that's really there is the rope. But then there's that snake. That's my maya. That is the maya. Yeah. Why can we say advaita, non-duality, if there's a rope and a snake? Because there's that and a snake is not there. There's not a rope and a snake. That snake has no substance, no being apart from the rope. I move the rope, get rid of the rope, no snake. And so now, the rope is free of the snake. See this relationship? This is satyamitya. That rope is free of the snake. Goes through no modification at all. The rope doesn't become the snake. Like that, Bhagavan does not become the creation. Like the Atma, the self, Brahman doesn't transform to become the creation. And yet there is nothing else there that is separate from consciousness to become the creation. So then what is this Maya? What's this lower property? That's a good question. What is it? Well, we say Yama iti Maya. That which is not is Maya. Why do we say that? What do we mean, that which is not? Because it doesn't have any being of its own. So how do we know? What are they talking about? We know exactly what they're talking about, or what Krishna is talking about, if you look at the relationship that yourself has to your thought. The relationship that you have to your thought is the relationship between consciousness and Maya. That's what it is. That's why we can say, have an imagination of a meadow. You can have that imagination. You can create a universe. That's Maya. That capacity is innate to Brahman. You know, when we say it's a capacity innate to Brahman, it has no being of its own. It is, you can't say it's something that Brahman has as though it's a separate object stuck onto Brahman. It's not a separate anything. But it's the nature of Brahman. It's Brahman with Maya. But there can't be any Maya without Brahman. You can't take some Maya, have some Maya over here and Brahman over here. So Brahman, we say Brahman with this creative capacity is Ishvara. That's what we say Ishvara is. We can look at what is actually just here. That's Brahman in terms of the substance that's here. But then if we look at this creative capacity that we're experiencing, from our own standpoint, we're experiencing a creation, right? What do we call that? When we analyze it, there's nothing here but Brahman. What do we call that? We call that Maya. Why do we even talk about it? Well, because we experience it. You experience that Maya in reference to your, in your own life. Maya is something that is pervasive, in fact, everybody's experience. That's why we say it's very worth your while to just sit and play with your mind. Practice, literally, practice having a thought, withdrawing the thought. Projecting a thought, withdrawing a thought. So that you can understand what that is. Because what you'll recognize is that the thought comes, it comes into manifestation, you say, okay, think of a meadow. Comes into manifestation, comes out of manifestation. And you notice at the same time that absolutely nothing is happening to you. That's one thing. Nothing is happening to you. And the being that thought has is you. It doesn't have a being separate from you. The consciousness which the thought enjoys is you. There's nothing separate. So that's the Satyam Mithya. The whole, if you can understand it in reference to you as a limited upadhi, as a jiva upadhi, then you can understand it in reference to Ishvara. Because we're talking about the same material. It's not like Ishvara is of some other material. And then inside of Ishvara, you're your own little thing. It's everything that is Ishvara you have, right? To a limited degree. And so, and in terms of yourself, it's not the limited degree. In terms of the self, it is Ishvara. In terms of your self-experience, it's me, the me experience. The me experience is Ishvara, is Ishvara's self. It's not yourself. It's Ishvara. You say this, the Atma that you are. I'm kind of being facetious with language here, but you say it's Atma. It isn't Atma, it's Brahman. It's not Atma, it's not part of Brahman. Atma is Brahman. What does that mean? Is that when you say, as a jiva sitting here, you say me, I am an existent being. This me, the self, this me. What you're pointing to is Ishvara. This is Ishvara's self. It's not yourself. It's Ishvara's self. There's only one self. You say, because what do you mean? You can say it's myself, and you say this is myself, this is myself, this is myself. This is a very personal self. This is who I am. say, yes, that's true. This is who you are. And this is who Ishwara is. Who you are is who Ishwara is. And so the self that you experience as the conscious being is the totality of Ishwara's experience. You're not experiencing your self experience, the me experience, is not a little experience of Ishwara's giant. Say, you can think Ishwara is infinite. So Ishwara has a giant me experience and you have a little me experience. No, because the me, the consciousness, is free of duality. So there's no big or little. So the me experience that is your experience is Bhagavan. That is Ishwara. So now, you see what I mean? So when you say I am, when it's referring to you, the conscious self, that is completely 100% Ishwara, not a part of it. And so you are Ishwara. From that, it's not you're like Ishwara, you are Ishwara from that standpoint, from conscious standpoint of consciousness. Now, the body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishwara, but made of the same Maya. Like there's an infinite Hiranyagarbha, say subtle, manifest knowledge. Your buddhi is part of that. And so your buddhi has limited manifest knowledge. See that? If there's infinite manifest knowledge, your buddhi has limited manifest knowledge. Now this is the thing. What is the relationship between limited manifest knowledge to the Atma? That relationship of the buddhi to the self is the same exact relationship of the whole Maya to the self. Because both are Maya. See? The thing is, you have a mind that can create a universe. That's your mini Ishwaratvam. You have a mind that can create, that can imagine, right? That's your mini exposure to being Bhagavan. Relationship exactly the same, because Satyam Mitya, the conscious being plus Maya Upadhi, right? Created Maya Upadhi. And so now, say you can understand that, then you can extend infinitely, right? If you understand the Satyam Maya, the Satyam Mitya, and your relationship to the mind stuff, that's higher property, lower property. If you can see experientially, this experiential reality, that nothing happens to you, and that you are the self of that, then that's exactly what they're talking about in terms of you are the self to the whole, when he's talking about himself as Ishwara. You see what it is? It's really, this part of it, this understanding is aparoksha. It's not indirect knowledge, it's aparoksha. Your understanding of the relationship between satya and mitya, between apara and para prakriti, the higher prakriti, the conscious being that you are, and this maya, that's aparoksha. That's something to be seen directly, immediately. And it's true on every level. It doesn't matter what level, let alone the physical universe that we're experiencing. And you're experiencing satya and mitya from Ishwara's drishti. Because this isn't your subjective creation. So now when you're experiencing this physical world, you have to appreciate this as Ishwara. And the relationship of Satyam Mitya to this, which is not your projection, but you see it in the same way as you see the Satyam Mitya to your own mind. In terms of the relationship, you know. Once you see this, whether you're looking out at Ishwara, means this world that's not projected by you. Right? Because this body, mind, sense, organs, that Jiva is not projecting this. Whether you're looking at it on that level as Ishwara, or you're looking at it from the standpoint of your own projections, your own subjective thoughts, The experience is not different. We think maybe there's a different experience, but there isn't. If you look at it, there's no different experience. Your being pervades what you recognize to be an objective reality that we call Ishwara Srishti. Your being it has that same satyam mitya relationship with this as it does with the relationship you have with the thoughts and feelings in your own mind. The satyam mitya relationship is not any different at all. And so if you understand it on a subjective level, the objective experientially is not any different. This objective level doesn't, your being is no less pervasive to it than it is to the subjective level of your own creations and imaginations. There's no difference at all in the experience. It's just, but then you'll say, yeah, but I didn't project this. That's true. You, the jiva, did not project this. This is part of Ishwara's projection. But there is no difference at all in the relationship between the consciousness, which is you, as being pervasive and stable in reference to this objective projection, and the consciousness, which is you, in its relationship to the subjective projection. Because consciousness isn't changing, and consciousness is not away from anything. And so you're never going to be able to experience your consciousness, the conscious being, as separate from any level of projection. Whether it's Ishwara's objective projection or your subjective projection, it makes no difference. You equally feel it. So now, what is hard is that because of the Dehatma Buddhi, this identification with the physical body, is so much that when you're looking out at this objective projection, Ishwara, through your sense organs, you're so identified with the body that this subject-object reality is what is standing out, right? That's why it's good to forget the objective for a while, for the moment, and go into just the relationship of the conscious being that you are with the thoughts in your mind. Because then you're not going to say, oh, I've got this subject-object, that I'm the body and this, and you know, and this is the world. That's why just pull back. Just stay in your mind, in your imagination. And then on that level, notice the satyam mitya. Notice the changelessness of yourself, the varta upadana karma, the changelessness of your being. How every thought comes from you, is sustained by you, goes back into you, and nothing touches you at all. Not at all. Not in the slightest bit. Once you master that recognition, now use your sense organs. And now you have, and your body is included now in this bigger picture, which you're not, your mind is not creating. Now we're into Ishwara. But now notice in this, is consciousness, is there any different relationship in terms of the me and the world that you're experiencing? The satyam and mitya, the apara and paraprakriti, there's no difference at all. You see if it is, see if you're any more contained. But you have to see it from this subjective standpoint first. Because then you can recognize your pervasiveness of the experience. Then you say, okay, now here's this world. Am I still pervasive to the experience? And there's no change whatsoever. That's something which is to be experienced. You know? And that's really, you know, as you start to see that, then all of this, I would say like this: what you see is that you are the self of all of this, and you remain untouched. You are the center of all of your experience, and you remain absolutely untouched. You know, and as we understand that, then you know. It gives me a certain there's a stable being that is present to my experience, and I am that stable being. That stable being is Bhagavan, is Ishwara. So Ishwara is the I am Ishwara. Another way you can say it is Ishvara is me. Right? This me is Ishvara. And so now, if you remember this, this whole section now is all on trying to gain that aparoksha jnanam. The aparoksha jnanam of what is Ishvara. So that's what we're trying to do here. What exactly is Ishvara? What is the Ishvara experience for me here? Now that I still have this jiva upadi, right? I still have this jiva upadi, and so within this, within Ishvara here, there's this jiva upadi that is experiencing the subject-object relationship. And that is going to be so as long as I have this physical body, as long as the prarabdha, you know, this body is going to be here experiencing Ishvara from within Ishvara. Right? Say this, say for me, say this jivanmukta, this body drops. Then this jiva no longer is experiencing Ishvara from it, within Ishvara. I'm not looking around from within Ishvara. I am Ishvara. You know, it's the like the difference. This, again, we use this example. It's the like the difference between if you're dreaming at night, so you're having a lucid dream at night, you have a dream which you're not, haven't taken a body in that dream. You have a dream, it's just scenery, say. You're not identified with anything in the dream, but it's your dream. That's Ishvara. You're the total then. Now, say you take a body within the dream, then that body, you're still the total, but that jiva now is experiencing the creation within the creation. Now, just go back and forth with that. You've got a lucid dream. You don't have any. You're not identified with any body in that lucid dream. Then what are you? You're just you. You're still you. Still the same me, but what is your upadi? The sameshti upadi. The sameshti maya upadi. Your upadi then is the total. You don't feel one way or the other. You say, oh, where's my body? You don't feel, where's my body? You are infinite. You're the whole. It's absolutely natural. You don't think, oh my God, I've got to get a body back. Your body is the sameshti upadi. Now the dream goes on and you take a body. Okay. Now you're looking at the dream. We're looking at that same sameshti upadi. You've taken a body within the sameshti upadi, the total. And now with that body, you're looking around, you know, experiencing the dream from the sense organs and with the hands and whatnot within it. And you feel yourself as a limited being. Okay, now you're a jiva, right? But really, where is the jiva? What jiva? Look at it this way. When I literally say, what jiva? Now say you're having this dream, and you're not identified with anybody in the dream, but there's a lot of characters in the dream. There's a lot of animals, there's a lot of people, there's birds, there's all kinds of life in the dream, but you yourself haven't taken a body in the dream. Then what would you say about this? You say, this is Ishvara. Ishvara is comprised of so many bhutas, all of the elements, all of the elementals, all of the beings, all of the birds, all of the animals, all of the human beings. This is all Ishvara. This is what Ishvara is. All of these things are part and parcel of Ishvara. And that's obvious to you, right? Because you're the whole. You haven't taken a body. You're not identified with anyone. So you're everything. And you realize, oh, Ishvara is everything, including all beings. But now you go in, you take a body in there, and you're looking around and say, Ishvara is Ishvara and I'm me. I'm the jiva, then Ishvara is a difference between the jiva and a difference between Ishvara. But if you hadn't taken that body and were just kind of viewing everybody else, you'd say all of these beings are just different manifestations of Ishvara. They're all part and parcel of Ishvara. That's the reality. There's one self, there's manifest knowledge that's in the form of the whole creation, and all of the beings are part and parcel of that infinite manifestation. And so they're all part, every being that there is in the creation is part of a bigger picture, and that bigger picture, that bigger story, is Ishvara. You know, and so for Jivanmukta, there's that consciousness goes on and on maturing. That's, you know, as you go on maturing into that consciousness of recognizing my whole life is my, right? This whole life is Ishvara. Your life is Ishvara. This whole very interconnected relationships that make up our life is all Ishvara. And so my relationship with that becomes one of, you know, that Ascharyavat, like that kind of wonder, or let's see, you know, how this is going to unfold. And you engage in the unfoldment of Ishvara. Right? Because here you are, it's a miracle. You've got a body, mind, sense organs, a sense of individuality. And with knowledge, you can, you know, dampen down that sense of doership. You dampen it down in a sense because you recognize that everything about your life is an unfoldment that is of a story that is much greater than you. And so you give over a lot of the reins to your bigger self, which is Ishvara. It's infinite intelligence versus limited intelligence. And so limited intelligence can be in awe of infinite intelligence. So you find yourself more and more responding, being part of the unfoldment, rather than letting yourself be part of Ishvara's unfoldment, being engaged in it, I'm not lazy, it's not that. It's being engaged in the unfoldment of Ishvara, rather than feeling like you're living in an inert world, meaningless world, and you have to carve out a meaningful life for yourself. It's a whole different consciousness. It's like, here's this inert, you know, world, and I'm this little pocket of consciousness, and I have to make meaning. I have to make meaning for myself. I have to make a life for myself. I have to make myself in this, be something. Rather than going on discovering the meaning that's already here. You know, discovering the meaningfulness of Ishvara, of this life, which is Ishvara. It's not that you have to make meaning. You have to be open to recognizing the meaning and the wonder of all of that. It's a whole totally different consciousness. And so now, when Krishna says, you know, he says, in this verse 5, it's really a Mahavakya, because he says, I want you to know this, my higher Prakriti. That is who you are. And it is that Prakriti, it is that self that supports the self of the whole creation. The self that you are, this higher Prakriti, which is myself, it's this self which is the one from whom this whole creation comes, is sustained, and goes into. That is who you are. You're really not a limited being. In fact, you are Ishvara, and now you're lost in this samsara because of ajnanam, you know? And looking around, you who are the whole, are looking around and saying, oh my God, you know, I'm a limited being that has to make a life for myself. Where in fact, you don't have to make a life for yourself. The life for yourself is already made. It is already here. This is it. You know, sometimes these, you know, there's this wonderful cartoon with these two monks sitting there side by side, and one looks at the other and says something like,
this is it, there's no more.
This is it, there's no more. Yeah. There's no more. Yeah. This is it, you know, there's no more. Yeah. But what's so beautiful, then that's kind of I think it's good, two Buddhas sitting there, but if we say it, this is, they have their own meaning, you know, but if we say, this is it, you know, there's no more. There is no more. There is no more. There is no more. The whole is here completely. You know? And the Ananda the highest ananda, the most ananda that can ever be gained in the entire creation, you know, is as available to you as to any other, any place else in the creation, because it is your own being. And for all beings, even the ants, all beings, even the chair, it doesn't make any difference. The relationship of the mind to the self, there is no distance. It's satyam nitya. You know? And so it's just a matter, the problem is not a matter of having to go and become something. There's nothing we have to go and become. There's something to know. And then all of the sadhanas that we have are only in honor of owning that which is already fully, totally present in our own being, owning that up. That's our task. Our task has nothing to do with anything else, really. You know? Everything else, in fact, is a diversion. If you say, oh, I have to accomplish this and I have to accomplish that. Not that you don't, you can accomplish this and you can accomplish that and become this and become that. And that's our, the prarabdha will do that for you, in fact. And it will make you do all of those things. And that's the lower prakriti. It's acting out. It's doing its thing. You know, and so that will take you along and you'll have this accomplishment or that accomplishment. Of course, as an agnani, as a jiva, you'll look around and say, well, my accomplishment isn't as good as their accomplishment. Or my accomplishment, you know, I only accomplished this much and so accomplished that much. And you know, you could have billions of dollars, you know, and all kinds of power, but you know, that person has more. It doesn't matter how high up you go, because it's infinite. How high up you go, there's somebody more. You just go into other bigger levels, you know, different levels. There's always somebody more. How far down you go in terms of your suffering and your misery, there's somebody more. There's always somebody who's got it worse, you know. And so that's an endless pursuit. If you're thinking about life in that way, there's no victory. There's no resolve. Because there's always somebody better. There's always somebody, because it's infinite. You know? If you're comparing, if anything to do with that, it doesn't work. You know, there's no ananda to be found in it, in the end. But all of that is meaningless in terms of what is the truth. The truth is that you are the Atma. Yourself is the only ananda that is there. You're the source of ananda. You're the source of wholeness. You are the wholeness. And for every being, there is no distance between that wholeness and your mind. That is satyam mitya. And so now the only pursuit really is one of antakarni, the sadhana. Shravana manana nididhyasana, whatever it takes to see clearly, and whatever sadhanas are necessary to rein in your mind, because the mind has become so lost in this, you know, samsara, that it's created, it finds itself in a lot of torturous pain in one way or another. So that all of this pain, we have to unravel the whole thing. So I can just get back to the simple reality. And that isn't always easy. It's not that it's easy. You know, because we've been around for a long time. You know, and created all kinds of karma, all kinds of problems, all kinds of things that have to be unraveled. You know? But the unraveling in terms of the satyam mitya relationship of myself, we have to do this work of unraveling and taking care of the mind and gaining knowledge. But there is no distance between your mind and yourself, so there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. Right? There's nowhere at all to go. There's just something to recognize. And it's a big thing to recognize it, because the identification is so much from the standpoint of the being a jiva. It's so much. This Dehatma Buddhi, it's huge from the standpoint of this jiva. But in terms of the solution, there's no distance. That's the thing. And so it's kind of all of these things. You already are Ishwara. You already are free. You already are Brahman. You know, and so you don't have to worry about having to. Time doesn't even matter. And Swamiji said that before, and I just keep seeing the truth of it. Time doesn't matter. Say, okay, well, gosh, this might take me 10 or 20 years, or maybe it'll take me another lifetime, you know, to work all this crap out of my mind. You know, or maybe, you know, I'm going to have to be suffering for this for how many more years? Well, you know, you've been suffering for beginningless years. And now we're worried about, you know, it might take 10, 20 years to work something out, or maybe even 2 years or 3 years. We act like it's a big deal. You've had lifetimes of suffering, you know. Lifetimes, finally you get to this very blessed, what we call very blessed position of being a mumukshu, you know, which is very, very rare. You can get to this place of being a mumukshu, asking these questions and wanting to know. It's considered extraordinary punya. You know, all of the Upanishads talk about it. It's extraordinary punya. And so now you have that. And now, but the thing is, you know, we have to sort through, you know, and take care of the damage. We gain this knowledge, and then we have to clean up the damage. It's like when Swamiji tells the tenth man story, sometimes he has that tenth man really bash his head really hard on the tree, you know. So his head's just, he's got a big gaping wound there, and he needs stitches, and needs antibiotics, and it's going to take months and months to heal. You know, but you know what? The tenth man's not dead. Right? He's right. The tenth, you know, all is well. It's just now there's all the stuff to mop up and take care of. That's the truth of it, right? And so what he might say, gosh, I wish that I hadn't beat my head on the tree for no reason, right? I wish I hadn't done that. But so what? The tenth man's not dead. And that's for us. I mean, we all look back into our past, and there's a lot of, and even in the present, there's a lot of pain. If I look into some of the things that happened in my past, I wish they hadn't happened. A lot of things, I just wish it hadn't happened. It would be better if it hadn't. But it did. So what am I going to do? It did happen. And then I've got a handful of things like that. I wish this didn't happen. I wish this shouldn't have happened. This shouldn't have happened. And this shouldn't have happened. And you know what? It shouldn't have happened. I can go that route. I have gone that route. You know? But these things did happen. And they happened. What intricate karmas were involved to cause you to have to go through these some things that, you know, that you can say, you know, this, you can say and mean it. This shouldn't have happened. That person should not have done that. What that person did to me was a dharma. I have some things I can, like that I can say. What that person did, the pain that person caused me, that because of their adharma, was horrendous. And you can be justified. You can say it. And be right, in the sense, it was a dharma. It was wrong. They shouldn't have done that. And by doing that, they caused you so much suffering.
Yeah.
You know, you can take that position, but at some point, you have to say yes. You have to say yes, and then you have to, in a way, give it over to Bhagavan. And say, who knows what intricate karmas were involved to get me into that position where I had to suffer that. Mm-hmm. It's very, you don't know why. But at some point, you have to, in a way, say, all right, and let it go. Mm-hmm. I learned a real lesson, a nice lesson from Jagadish. Mm-hmm. I think I've told this story before. He was picking me up at the airport and helping me to fly from somewhere to somewhere in India. He met me in India and was helping
Bombay.
Me to get, yeah, I think Bombay, and he was helping me to get to Coimbatore. So very nice of him. I didn't know him that well at that time. But There was all this baggage problem, and they were checking, wanted to check. He had his bags there too, and they're going to fly together to Coimbatore from Bombay. So we had to take all the bags, you know, and go through this customs and all this. And this one guy who was receiving the bags and checking them had it out for Jagadish for some reason, you know. And he was so mean to him, you know, and was very, very rude and asking him to pull this apart and that apart and just speaking to him and talking to him very, very gruffly, you know. It was awful. And I was kind of watching this go on, and Jagadish was just kind of being polite and trying to survive, you know, survive this thing. And so finally the guy wraps it up and ties all of his bags together like they're supposed to and lets him go. But Jagadish turns around and we start walking away and says, "Om." He goes something like, "Om. Whatever I did to this man, I'm very sorry. whatever I did to him in the past, please forgive me, I'm so sorry." I kind of like that, you know. Because what are you going to do, you know? So all I'm saying is that there's so many things that happen. There's so many hurts, there's so many things. But at some point, we have to work through those things and work on giving them over to Ishwar. That's where they belong. That's where they belong. We have to understand them. We have to give them up. We have to move on. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying that those are our sadhanas. Those are our struggles. You know? And in the end, you know, in the last analysis, you know, there is no distance between you and Ananda other than your commitment to dukkha. There's a commitment to our, there's different commitments to our dukkha, to our pain, and to our, the ways that we've been abused or hurt, you know. And I'm telling you this now, I don't know why it's coming up right now. I've personally done a lot of work on this kind of stuff, to let go of those kind of things. And I'm sure I'm not alone. I don't think any one of us could say that we have lived a life where we haven't been hurt. You all have, you're carrying your bag of real hurts. There's the little hurts nobody cares about. You know, those are the easy little ones. Just let them go. That's all easy and fine. But everybody's got big ones, you know, big ones that we're carrying, you know, and those need to be given over to Ishwar, and that takes work, you know, it's work, but it's worth that work. Any other work, you know, at least this one resolves into freedom. It resolves into freedom. The other, going the other route does not resolve. It just keeps, we keep banging our head against on the wall until finally we say, okay. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite little last story, one of my favorite stories that Swamiji tells, that even though I always know this, it doesn't, you think it would help you right away, but it doesn't. It's the story of, you know, in India, in these villages, there's so many monkeys, you know. And so on the porches, they have these big, big pots where they store all of their nuts, you know, all their different types of nuts. The pots have little tiny holes in the top. That's the lid. It's a little tiny hole. So you have a little tiny hole like that and then a great big pot. It's all full of nuts and acorns. The monkeys will go in and stick their hand into the neck of the pot and grab a big handful of nuts. And then they go to pull their hand out. And they can't because their hand is full of the nuts. Right? And they really want those nuts. And so they won't let go and they keep trying and working and working to get their hand out. But actually, the only way that they can get their hand out is to let go of the nuts. That's the only way.
And
but
so
that's
now,
what I want.
But so now what happens is the owner, you know, the house will hear the monkey squealing and squealing and trying to get, you know, the hand up, and will come out with a stick, right, to beat the monkey away. Now the owner hears a big stick and here's the monkey. They're looking at each other, you know. And the owner comes now with the stick to the monkey. The monkey, all that monkey has to do is let go of those nuts and run away. Okay? But he doesn't. And so the owner comes and gives the monkey a beating, you know, and the monkey's screaming and crying and crying and crying and finally just lets go of the nuts and runs away. And I think that's what happens to us. At some point, we're being beaten and beaten and hurt and hurt and hurt by the way we're relating to something until finally it's beaten out of us and we let go of the nuts. But it means that we have to let go of those nuts. You know what I mean? We have to let go of the nuts. Until we let go of the nuts, until we get low, we will just be ruthlessly beaten. And it's a hard lesson. And the universe has very hard lessons. But the lessons are relentless. The lessons are relentless. They will keep going until you open your hand and let go of the nuts. And then you'll say, oh my God. As you go crippling, you know, crippled walking away from the thing. I wish I would have let go of those nuts a long time ago. I really, it would have been a lot easier. We go on discovering this over and over and over again. That's the vairagya. This is what we mean by vairagya. Vairagya is not an easy thing. It's only easy to the things it's easy to. Then you don't really need the vairagya. The vairagya is already over. Right? You all, if it's easy to give that thing up, you already have vairagya. So vairagya, that's, vairagya is a real sadhana. It's a maturing in the light of your knowledge. Vairagya comes as you recognize, I don't need that, I'm free. Over and over in so many different levels. So it's a beautiful and very challenging journey. Right? Knowledge is knowledge. Your mind has to live up to that knowledge. That's a journey in a sense. It's a journey of maturity. That's what we're doing. And get off, go ahead and get off track. No. You can get off track for a little bit. Bhagavan will just go... knock you right back on. Because where is the ananda? You can get off track if there's some ananda out there. But there isn't. So you're getting off track are just little temporary escapades. You know? They never last. They can't last. Because what you're seeking is to be whole. And the solution to that is wholeness itself. And that's only, you know, in one place. And so there's no, you don't have to worry, you know. And I think Bhagavan does the whole creation does a really good job in terms of funneling you back to the task at hand. And the thing is, like Vidyaranya has said, you know, once you gain this knowledge, I don't mean nishta, but once you see it, then he says that, you know, apparently the student wanted to kind of go his own way, you know, go off and just do his own thing. Forget about this. You know, he just said, I'm sorry, it's too late. You can't unknow. You can't unknow. We all know that, you know. Okay, that's enough. Let's take a minute.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.